We are just weeks away from the Winter Olympics in China, where American skiers Michaela Schifrin and River Radamus will be going up against the world's best. Now, they grew up in Colorado ski towns, the product of an industry pioneered by World War II soldiers. Many were members of an elite mountain unit that fought German forces in the mountains of northern Italy. Here's a snippet of a documentary about them. It's called Climb to Glory.
The greatest blessing that came out of the 10th for many of us was the great common love of the mountains. And it became the lives of most of us.
These guys are not only war heroes, but to me, heroes in the ski industry.
So let's look back at the hallowed 10th Mountain Division with McKay Jenkins. He's author of The Last Ridge, the epic story of America's first mountain soldiers and the assault on Hitler's Europe. He teaches journalism and environmental humanities at the University of Delaware. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So take us to World War II in Europe, where Italy, Germany, Norway, they all had elite soldiers trained in the mountains. But what convinced the U.S. military to say, you know, we're going to do this too?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And Alpine Europe were well-versed in training mountain soldiers. They had fought in World War I in the mountains and had developed a lot of mountain soldiering techniques. But what Americans started to notice as the war began, before the U.S. ever got into it, they would be in movie houses in the United States looking at newsreels. So the United States found itself in the late 1930s and early 1940s one of the only major powers without any mountain troops or cold weather troops.
Mm. And I gather at this time, the training for these American Alpine units began in Washington State and in Colorado. Who were these men who got recruited?
The skiing industry at the time was very much in its infancy. Mostly the people who skied in the United States were in New England because skiing was not a developed sport. There were very few resorts. It was hard to get to the mountains. And so the people who could do it were generally fairly well-to-do, in this case, actually literally Ivy League students. So you would get on a ski train in, you know, outside of Yale or Boston and go up to the mountains and ski in Vermont. So you had skiers that were fledgling members of this new sport, this new industry. And then you had mountaineers out west. So a lot of the fledgling mountaineering was going on in places like Colorado and Wyoming and the Pacific Northwest. These guys were training outside of Vail, Colorado, at a brand new base called Camp Hale. And they were doing unprecedented training and gear testing. They were going up to 12,000 feet in winter conditions where it was, you know, 20 or 30 below zero, carrying 90 pounds of gear on their backs and testing the limits of human capacity and new technology. And they trained and they trained and they trained. And as the news media started to hear about these guys, they would send out photographers from Life magazine or they would send out film crews from Hollywood, and they took movies of these guys and put them on the covers of magazines. And they were very famous people, very famous soldiers before they ever actually saw any action.
All right. So by the time they eventually were deployed to Europe, where'd they go?
So it wasn't until very late in the war, way after the army was moving northward along the Italian boot, that they finally inserted them in northern Italy, right near what are known as the Apennine Mountains. This is a mountain range that is sort of southwest of the Alps. And they finally inserted them towards the very end of the war. There were just a matter of a few months left. But they needed to finally break through the defenses of the German army, which had been bleeding the Allied forces for years in Italy. It was one of the most bloody campaigns of the war.
Yeah. And just briefly, as we, you know, talk a little bit more about the war, there was one, I gather, treacherous climb under the cover of darkness that was a critical moment here. And you write about it in your book. Can you tell us about that?
So Riva Ridge was this ridgeline overlooking this very important valley in northern Italy, and the Germans were up on top in all of their bunkers and happily defending themselves without any trouble. And finally, when the 10th Mountain guys got there, they put about 750 soldiers at the bottom of this ridge and said, we need to knock these Germans off this outpost because we can't penetrate the valley without getting them out of the lookouts. So now you have 750 soldiers at the bottom of this ridge, and they were so outgunned and had such a disadvantage because they were at the bottom and the Germans were at the top that they were told that they had to take the ammunition out of their weapons. and they had to climb this ridge in the middle of the winter, in the middle of the night, and climb up this ridge and, you know, knock the Germans out in the morning, which they did. So 750 men climbed up with their weapons, got to the top. You know, the Germans are coming out of their bunkers all stretching and yawning and making their coffee, and suddenly they're finding themselves captured by these 10th Mountain guys. And what the soldiers found out later, and what historians know, is that the military predicted an 80% casualty rate during that climb.
Wow.
And in fact, there were zero casualties. They made it. They all made it to the top. It was really kind of a miraculous, you know, exhibition of the training that they had been doing for so many years.
Now, after the war, veterans of the 10th Mountain Division, they founded places like Vail, Aspen, Lake Placid in New York, and Stowe in Vermont. Some of them designed cutting-edge ski equipment. I mean, what was the, I guess, the vision of key people, key veterans of the 10th Mountain Division, to develop skiing for the masses?
You know, these guys had grown up skiing or climbing in the mountains of New England, the mountains of the Pacific Northwest, the mountains of Colorado and Montana. And after the war, they went back home, and they had had so much fun, believe it or not, despite the war. They had had such a great experience with all this new technology and meeting all these great other athletes that they started trying to make a profession, make a life with this kind of thing. So they started the ski resorts in Aspen and Vail and Stowe, Lake Placid, places like that. But they also started very well-known mountaineering schools like the National Outdoor Leadership School. David Brower was the most important environmentalist of the, you know, the middle 20th century. He ran the Sierra Club. They had the National Ski Patrol came out of this group. High Mountain Rescue came out of this group. Avalanche Science came out of this group. The U.S. ski team was coached by a veteran of this group. It's worth remembering that some of the founders of this division had actually come over from Europe because Americans, as I said, didn't really have a lot of experience skiing or mountaineering. So you had Swiss and Austrian and Norwegian world famous gold medal winners coming over to join the forces in the U.S. to train them to go back to Europe and try to liberate Europe. So it was really quite an amazing international group of world-class athletes. And once they got out of the war, they laid down the foundation for what is now the entire U.S. ski industry.
And did this come, I guess, at the right moment in economic time after the war, when the middle class grew and people went on vacations and, you know, eventually they had interstate highways to get to ski resorts?
Yeah, that's a great point. Of course, that all the economic and physical structure of the landscape was changing rapidly too. So suddenly New England, you know, developed a ski industry because there were roads up there. And now lots more people had money. So you had middle-class skiers, not just elite, you know, Yale graduates skiing. So absolutely, that's for sure. On the other hand, if all that infrastructure had been laid down and there was no expertise to take advantage of it, probably none of this would have happened.
Hmm. Well, you spoke with many of these men, many of the veterans from the 10th Mountain Division. Let's just play a little snippet from the documentary The Last Ridge, which is based on your book.
What tied us together was a love for the outdoors, for the mountains.
We were tough. We were disciplined, I think. It's a hard word to use, but we were gentlemen. These were good guys.
And finally, McKay Jenkins, I guess, any final thoughts on how you reflect back on their legacy?
Yeah, I reflect back because the work that I do, which is looking at the history of the American landscape and how it came to be, you know, runs through this group of people. Like, they really were the most highly educated unit in the American Army. As I mentioned before, they were highly trained in all these things. So their legacy of environmental conservation, their legacy of putting down a footprint on the ski industry and the mountaineering industry, the mountain rescue industry, it's very hard to go through the mountains of the United States and not see their fingerprints all over the place. And that's not a war legacy. That's a conservation legacy, which I'm really quite happy to know about.
McKay Jenkins is the author of The Last Ridge, the epic story of America's first mountain soldiers and the assault on Hitler's Europe. He teaches at the University of Delaware. McKay Jenkins, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been great talking to you.